We're holding on Vav Hamad Aleph, five lines from the top. We left off that we're in the middle of a discussion about, so we're still in the middle of the discussion about Ta'acha, which we'll finish today, Be'ez Hashem. We discussed yesterday that we have, the Pasuk had said, V'hoye b'chochet, that if you delay in bringing your korban, then there'll be a sin in you. And we said that means there'll be a problem with you, but not a problem with the korban. The korban remains kosher. And we said, why do we need that? We have other psukim. So we said we have a pasuk by Bechor. We said, okay, fine, a Bechor is a special kind of situation. Maybe you can't generalize from it to other korbanos, because most korbanos are brought in order to make things right with Hashem or something, or to give Hashem a present, whereas a Bechor is neither of the above. Then we said, what about what Ben Azai said? Right, basically. Then we said, what about Ben Azai had said that the pasuk implies that only Oisai, only Pigul, actually becomes... thank you. Only Pigul becomes possible, and his lawyer Rote is not accepted by Hashem, whereas a korban that's delayed is not. So again, we know that generally to all korbanos. So what do we need a pasuk over here? So this is where we're up to. Ella, the Gemara says, but okay. So then, in that case, we have to explain b'chochet v'loy b'ishtechochet. What the pasuk means then, as some mafarshim say that the Gemara is saying this is only according to Ben Azai, other mafarshim explain that the Gemara means more generally, that we have to amend what the Braita said before, that it wasn't b'chochei, but rather not v'loy b'korban chochet, but rather v'loy b'isht chochet. That there won't be a sin, there won't be any punishment towards your wife. Now, why do you need to mention that? How could that mean it? Because you might have thought like this. Rabbi Yochanan, or some say Rabbi Lazar, had said, "Ein ishta shaladam mesa, a person's wife does not die, elayim kein mevakshin men mamin ve'ein loy, unless there's money being demanded of him, which he doesn't have." What does that mean? In Zvachim, where this Gemara is also brought, Rashi says it's talking about, for example, a person stole and doesn't have what to pay back, then this kind of thing can happen. That his wife passes away. We'll talk about in a minute what the appropriateness of that is. Tosfos themselves says that no, based on the context over here and based also on a Gemara which we had way back in Shabbos, it seems to be talking about when a person made a neder to pay money, in this case, for example, to bring a korban or something, and doesn't end up bringing it.
Not just when he just borrowed and he didn't.
Well, no, so according to Rashi, it wasn't borrowing. According to Rashi, it was, for example, a person had stolen money and now doesn't have to pay back. Yeah. But Tosfos says that we're talking about a neder over here.
This is the person who was stolen from, that they're...
No, we're talking about the person who did the stealing and now does not have what to pay back the person who he stole from. Or, according to Tosfos, the person made a neder to bring a korban, for example, and now he can't afford, and now he doesn't have the money to pay it. Why his wife? Shenemar, the pasuk says, im ein lachal shalem, the context in the pasuk in Mishle is saying basically don't end up owing money, because if you don't end up having to pay, lama yikach mishkobcha mitachtecha, why should he take away your sleeping thing from underneath you? Literally, mishkobcha means like your bed, mishkobcha, whatever, but here the Gemara is darshaning it as your wife. So then, Ema b'chai oven to balta acha. You would think, therefore, for this avera, balta acha nami ishte mesi. You might think the same thing. A person's wife is apt to die because of that, as a punishment to him. Kamash malon, that's the chiddush. That's what we mean by v'loy b'ishte chachet. Unlike being late with the korban is different than not paying it at all. Now, why pacta? What's the logic to say first of all, you have to ask. I mean, what's the fairness of this? I mean, the Eibishter is a dayan emes, so the Eibishter is not going to have that. You know, a person's wife is a person of her own. After all, she's not just your possession or something. So why would the Eibishter make it then that because you didn't pay a neder, therefore your wife died? So there's a couple of interesting explanations about it. First of all, there's the idea that in general. We talk about when we say that Hatsur Tom Impala, when we say the Eibishter's justice is completely just. There's a famous vort on that they say when for example a person commits a crime and they're sentenced in court, you know, they're sentenced to jail or even they're sentenced to the death penalty or whatever, you know, the judge is looking at what the person themselves did. Yeah, the judge, you know, may take into consideration the person's family background and whatnot, you know, but the judge can't and won't take into consideration, let's say, you know, this person is going to be executed, you know, now his wife and his kids and whatever are going to be devastated, and his friends and whatever. I mean, you know, it's a pity, but you know, you can't do like that. You know, I mean, you can't consider what effect it has on everybody else. But Hashem's justice isn't like that. When Hashem, for example, decides that it's time for a person to die, Hashem takes into consideration not only what the person themselves have done, but also what the people around them have done, whether they're deserving, basically, of having such a thing happen to them. So therefore, there's the idea over here when we're saying that a person, when we're saying that a person's wife might die for failure to bring the darim, we're not talking about she herself there's some other reason for which she would have to anyway. But the Eibishter also takes into consideration the fact that if it weren't for the fact that the guy had not failed to pay his neder, the Eibishter might say, okay, maybe it's time for her to die, but how can I do that to her husband? He doesn't deserve it, basically, as opposed to when not. There's an interesting idea that the Shittim Kubetis says, why might it be that a person is saying, I don't have the money to pay back, to pay for my neder or to pay for my gezel, as the case may be? Because he owes, there's a certain amount of money that he has on lien for his wife's ksuba. So in a sense, like, you know, that's sort of a contributing factor. The Eibishter says, well, what? So the Eibishter says, basically, okay, look, you know, if you're using your ksuba as an excuse, and because of that you're not paying your neder, then, you know, then we'll arrange you won't have a ksuba to have to pay. And then there's an interesting idea that one of the Balei HaMusar of Chaim Shmuel Levitz says is basically the idea, why would it happen? Going back to the idea that if we're talking the more general idea that a person owes money to somebody, let's say, for example, he owes somebody for a loan and is not paying back. Now, what's the idea, he says? A person who's borrowed money from somebody else, I mean, they're going to feel a debt of gratitude towards that person, which means, therefore, you know, so if they don't have the money to pay, they'll do everything it takes. You know, they'll work a third job or whatever, if that's what it takes, in order to have the money to pay back somebody who did them such a favor and lent them money. Somebody who doesn't do that means they don't really have a sense of hakaras hatov, a sense of gratitude. So he says, who's the person in a person's life that he should have the most gratitude to on a day-to-day basis is his wife. So if a person doesn't have the sense of gratitude, for example, towards his creditors, not necessarily does he have the same kind of sense of gratitude towards his wife. So the Eibishter says, in that case, what do you need one for, so to speak?
So, since we're talking about that, in practicality, what do you do when you lend money to people and they don't pay you back? What do you suppose?
So, it's an obligation on them to pay back, but actually you, as the lender, actually have a different obligation. You have the obligation, the Torah says, lo siya lo kenosha, don't act like a creditor towards him. Even it says, even the Gemara says elsewhere, lo siya lo kenosha. The Gemara actually even says that it means, lo siya lo kenosha, do not be to him like a creditor. Which actually means, even the Gemara says, that I forget where this is, I think in Baba Matzia, that it means if you know the person doesn't have money to pay back, don't even pass by in front of him. Because then he's going to see you and be embarrassed. If you need the loan to be paid back, that's fine. You know, you have to take him to Basin. But don't go bothering him and making him embarrassed and so forth. The person himself has an obligation to pay back. That's what we're talking about over here. One other interesting thing before we go on from this is, so what is the Gemara saying over here? That for failure to pay a neder altogether, a person might lose his wife. But for delaying it for Baal Ta'acher, then not. Now, there's a question that a number of Mephoshim talk about that, because we do find one reason it says why did Yaakov have to lose Rachel, his beloved wife, is because he delayed in paying off his neder. He had told the Eibishter, he had promised to the Eibishter at the beginning of Parshas Vayetzeh that, you know, I'm gonna make this place a Beis Elikim, and so on and so forth, and he ended up with took 22 years until 20 odd years until he got the Beis El. And there's a medrash that says on that actually the Eibishter said that because of that is why Yaakov suffered a series of disasters. First, what happened with Dinah, and then that Rachel passed away, and then the whole story with actually Rachel actually passed away after he was done in Beis El. That was actually a different thing because he was delaying in getting home from Kibbutz Av. But there is actually a medrash that ties those two things together. Why did he end up losing Rachel shortly after he came into Eretz Yisrael? Because he delayed in paying his neder. So then, to go to Beis El and
he didn't say he was going to do it within 20.
No, but still, he delayed it, just like we're saying over here. A person for 22 years.
For 22 years. Yeah. He delayed it because he was supposed to delay?
That's the thing. According to the Medrash is saying, the Ebishter kind of judged Yaakov on a strict level, that he didn't have to spend 20 years in Laban's house, apparently, is the idea. I mean, we say the same thing, that's why he... What? Apparently there's the idea that somehow he could have made arrangements. I don't know, but I mean there's the same thing that he lost Yosef for 22 years because he was away from he missed out on Kibbutz Arba'im for 22 years. They should judge his tzaddikim very strictly. Anyway, there's the question. You were saying that delaying paying a neder does not cause that. So what's the deal? So there's a couple of different answers on that also. One of them is that it's different with Rachel. She died in childbirth. Childbirth in general, the Gemara says over there in Shabbos, is a dangerous time. The Ebishter judges people more strictly than he otherwise would. So yes, then in that case, then this rule that we're saying over here, v'hoi v'chochet, v'loi v'ishta chochet, might not apply. There's another very interesting answer that therefore Yaakov ended up losing Rachel in childbirth, even though it was only for delaying giving a neder rather than not doing it at all.
And that's because...
Because she was in childbirth, because it's a more dangerous time, and therefore the Ebishter judges people more strictly at that time. When the Gemara is saying over here, v'hoya b'chochet, v'loi b'ishter chochet, it's talking about normal circumstances.
No.
There's an interesting answer based on a meshach chochma, which is kind of a long answer, so just to give it b'kitzer. When Yaakov originally stopped by Beisel, the pasuk says he set up a matzeva. But later on, he didn't. Later on, he built a mizbeach over there. There's the famous idea, Rashi says at the beginning of Parshas Shoftim, that originally a matzeva was a beloved thing by the Ebishter, but after the Goyim started building matzevas for Avodah Zarah, then the Ebishter hated it, Asher Sonei, Hashem Elokecha, and from then on you have to build a mizbeach. What happened? Yaakov had promised to build a matzeva over there. By the time he comes back, 22 years later, he can't build a matzeva. All he can build is a mizbeach. So in effect, he didn't keep his neder. So it's not just a matter of delaying it. In that case, that 22-year delay made it that now he's not able to fulfill his original neder at all, to build a matzeva.
Because in the meantime,
the situation changed, yeah. So therefore, that's what we're talking about over here. It wasn't just a matter of... So that we're not just talking about over here. Here we're talking about delaying a neder, but eventually you bring the actual carbon. There he ended up actually fulfilling his complete neder at all.
So I'd like to know, was it the whole 22 years that were considered too much? 8 years from the 14 years that he was...
We don't know. I mean, it was 7, 7, and 6. It was 7 years for that he ended up working and then married Leah, another 7 for Rachel, and then 6 more that Laban kept him around. Maybe it's the 6 that are a particular problem. Maybe the fact that he was willing to stay for the 6 shows retroactively that he didn't so much mind staying away and not doing Kibbutz Arba Im and not fulfilling his vow for the other 14. Maybe it's even he didn't have to begin with say, I'm going to work for 7 years. Maybe he could have offered to work for only for 1 year. We don't know. I don't know.
7, 7, and 6 is
yeah.
20 years.
It's 20 years, that's what I'm saying. And then he spent another 2 years getting home. He spent 18.
2 years.
Yeah, he spent 18 months in Sukkot and 6 months in Beis Yel.
Why?
Akasha, I don't know. All right. Anyway, let's get back to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa. So yesterday we learned about the loitzes involved with Baal Pacha. Today, now we're going to learn about the next pasuk after that, after the pasuk that we quoted, Ki Sidur Nedul Hashem Alekecha Loitze Achal Hashamloi. 2 pasukim later, the Torah tells us the parallel mitzvah sasei, and we're going to darshan each phrase of that also. So when the pasuk says the what comes out of your mouth, what comes out of your lips, that's a mitzvah seseh. Rashi says because the implication is whatever you say with your mouth, you have to keep. Tosfos brings a different pasuk. We make kind of a zeta shavah. There's a different pasuk that says v'hayotze mipichem tasu, what comes out of your lips. This is talking about Moshe is saying to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven about the deal that they made so that they'll help conquer Eretz Yisrael and they'll get the land on the east side of the Yarden. He tells them what comes out of your mouth you have to do. So we see that.
Even if you say
Bnei Gad, you should try to keep it. But so when we say Moshe, Svasecha, Zum, Svasecha, this is a mitzvah seseh to keep what you say. Tishmo, then when the pasuk continues, Tishmo, you should keep, Zumitzvah loitzaseh. This is a loitzaseh, meaning the loitzaseh, Baal Ta'achar. Because we have a general rule that wherever the Torah tells us a lashon of Hishomer, we have this at the end of Erevin, wherever the Torah tells us an expression with Hishomer, be careful, then it's a loitzaseh. Tosfos has a discussion about it, that actually we find that Tishmo in connection with Mitzvah's essay is also considered an essay. Anyway, here it kind of amounts to the same thing. Be careful that you don't do Baal Ta'achar. So then the pasuk continues. I should say the whole pasuk goes like this.
Moises, it's not
because what else would it be? That's the loitzes that we're talking about. It's Baal Ta'achar. what it said to Pesukim earlier. The whole pasuk goes like this. Moitzos chasecha tishmer va'asi. So what comes out of your lips, you should watch, you should guard, and you should do. Kasher nadarta, as you vowed. La'ashem alekecha nadava, as you promised Hashem, your God, a nadava. Asher divarta b'ficha, which you spoke with your mouth. So again, there seem to be a few extra words in this pasuk, so the Gemara is darshining them. So moitzos chasecha, we said tishmer v'asi. Tishmer is the loisese. V'asi, so when it says you should do, that's an extra thing. Once it says Moitzes Chasecha and Tishmer, what's the extra word Vaasi? So you should do. It's Azhara lo Beis Din Sheya'atsucha. It's a warning to Beis Din that they should make you do it. Meaning, if a person donates a carbon, a person promises I'm going to bring a carbon, or a person is chayiv in a carbon, and they don't end up bringing it, Beis Din is empowered to force them to bring it. As we'll talk about soon. Kasher nadarta, when the pasuk says as you vowed, then neder. This is talking about when you made a vow. La'ashem alekecha, the words la'ashem alekecha, eilu chataris v'ashamas erlus v'shlamim. This refers to the various kinds of korban, chatas, asham, erla, and shlamim, which, as we said yesterday, they go to they're all things that you owe to Hashem. Nedava k'mashmoy, the word nedava means exactly what it sounds like. As we said yesterday, there's a difference between neder and nedava. Neder is when you say I promise to bring a korban. And then you set aside a particular animal to satisfy the responsibility. And nedava is when you say, I promise to bring this animal as carbon. Asher dibarta, when the pasuk says, which you spoke, elukotche bedekabayis, this refers to all the various kinds of hektish that go to bedekabayis, which includes a number of the ones that we mentioned in the previous braises, domim, erchin, charomim, hektishes, all those go to bedekabayis, so all those go under the category of asher dibarta, which you spoke.
Why?
Because you all speak them out with your mouth. You
only those?
Not only those, but those are things that you didn't have to give. You don't have to give something to Hektish. But you said, I promise to give this thing to Hektish. Well, then Asher Dibarta. And not only that, actually, the rule is, Hektish is unlike, giving something to Hektish is unlike giving something to a Hedyot. The rule is, throughout Shas, Amir L'Gavoya K'Misir L'Hedyot. When you say verbally, if I say verbally to you, I'm going to give you my phone, I'm not obligated to. Even technically, if you pay me for it, then I'm still able to change my mind. There's a curse of Mishapara involved, as the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia. But, you know, legally it's possible to do. Only when you do Meshicha on the object have you actually made a Kinyan on it. But, well, and Meshicha, Hagbah, yeah, any of the various things that constitute a Kinyan.
After you say it,
that would be Gadol.
Why?
But because you didn't
give it to me.
Because unless I give it to you to do Meshicha, right? But with Hektish, if I say I'm donating my phone to Hektish, that's it. Automatically, the phone is Hektish. No Meshicha, nothing. Amir LaGavaya, saying to Hashem is the equivalent to Mesir LaHedyot. Is the equivalent of handing it over and doing Meshicha or whatever for a regular person. So yes, Asher Dibarta therefore can refer to Hektish, because that's what constitutes. That's how Hektish comes about. The pashtus, yeah.
No, it's not meaningless.
It's not meaningless, but it doesn't have an effect. It doesn't have, right. No, it is true, actually. I mean, there is the point that it has to be piv v'libe shoving with any kind of neder. It does have to be that you said what you meant, and you meant what you said. If I said I'm giving my phone to Hektish, and I meant to say I'm giving my phone to you, then it's not chal. It has to be that I intended to give it to Hektish, and I actually said what I intended. Yeah, and then the last word, b'ficha, when the pasuk says with your mouth, zut tzedakah. This refers to tzedakah. Why is that? Rashi says just we have an extra word on the pasuk, so we're darshaning it referring to tzedakah. Tosfos says there's actually a pasuk that associates the word mouth with tzedakah, yetzi mipi tzedakah, pasuk in Yeshaya. Now, interestingly, there are a few things missing in this second braisa. The previous one, where we learned all the things that Baal Ta'achar applies to, mentioned a few other things that aren't in this braisa. It mentioned Leket Shitcha and Peah. In particular, it mentioned Leket Shitcha and Peah. So why does this one, and it mentioned Meiser and Bechur. The reason why is because the Gemara is going to talk about soon that we actually need two different psukim. That's why the Gemara is going to ask why we need this extra one if we have the previous one. And the answer is there's two different stages with a regular carbon. You have two different stages, or with tzedakah or whatever. You have two different stages. There's when you say I'm going to give this carbon, and then when you actually set aside the animal to satisfy the responsibility. You know, there's, I promised to bring an oilah, and then you set aside a particular animal to use as an oilah.
So between the time you say it and you set it...
So you have two different stages. You have from when you set it until you set aside the animal, and then you have from when you set aside the animal until you actually go and bring it to the carbon. The point is, with leket, shikha, and peya, you don't really have those two stages. Chosmith had talked about earlier, how is it you have what kind of delay are we talking about with leket, shikha, and peya anyway? You're supposed to leave them out in the field for the poor people. And one answer was, basically, when you're collecting them because, you know, there's no poor people around. Chosmith gave a few different answers over there, but the gist of it is, there's no two stages with leket, shikha, and peya. There's only the one stage.
So you immediately Baal Ta'acha?
Not immediately, no. There's still Baal Ta'acha, but there's not two stages from when we would think Baal Ta'acha starts applying. Unlike, therefore it doesn't list those. Similar, there's Meiser and Bechor. There's no two stages, because Bechor is Kaddish right away when it's born, and Meiser only becomes Kaddish when it walked out, the 10th one. Yeah. This will become clearer after we talk about the two stages in the Gemara soon. So now to analyze the price. So Amamar, Moitzes Fasecha Zu Mitzvah Tese, when we said that the word Moitzes Fasecha is a Mitzvah Tese, Lomali, what do we need that? I have a different pasuk. Mi uvasa shoma v'abesim shoma nafka. We have a pasuk that says in Parshas Ru'e, you should come there to the Beis Mikdash and you should bring your karbonis. So you have a mitzvah asset to bring your karbonis. What do you need? A different any karbon that you're supposed to bring, whether you're obligated in al-chila or whether you're obligated yourself. So what do you need this mitzvah v'secha? And before the Gemara starts answering, it asks two other ones. Tishmer zumitzvah loyseh lamali. When it says that tishmer means a loyseh, again, what do I need that for? Loyseh achal l'shamay nafka. We have that from two pasukim earlier, from the pasuk we quoted in the Braisa yesterday. Loyseh achal l'shamay. That's the loyseh. What do we mean an extra loyseh? And when it says va'asiso azhar l'beis in shiasucha, when it says that you should do it, means it's a warning to Beis Din that they should make you do it. If a person said, I'm going to bring a korban, and then they don't end up doing it, then koifanoise, then Beis Din forces him. So again, what do you need that? Lomali, mi yakrivoise nafka. We learn that from the words, yakrivoise. Zitanya, as we learn in Braisa, yakrivoise, at the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, it's el pesach ha'omod yakrivoise. What does that mean? Melamacher koifanoise, this teaches us that Beis Din can force him to bring the korban if he didn't bring it on his own. Yachol bar kochoi, so then you would think it means he brings the korban against his will. Tam ablaim a lirutzonei, but the pasuk continues over there that he has to bring it. Yachol bar kochoi, lirutzonei, with his free will. Hakeitzad, famous thing, kofenos atriyem arotzani, they force him until he says, I want. Now how does such a thing work? So there's a famous Rambam at the end in Hilchos Geirushin that the Rebbe used to quote all the time, that when Beis Din forces a yid to do something which is required to apitoda, in this case, bring a korban, the case that I'm talking over there is about giving a get, then, yeah, a yid's real will, a yid's deep-down will, is to do what the Eivishter wants. But he has a yitzhara that forces him to not do so. So when Beis Din applies pressure, that takes away that yitzhara and reveals the essential pint of the yid that wants to do what the Eivishter wants. So therefore, it does end up being l'ritzona. It does end up being with his will, because that is his true will. It's a yid's true will is to do what the Eivishter wants.
What happens if
he doesn't say? They have to keep on applying the pressure. Yeah.
At the point where he really wants to get.
Same with a get,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. A get is a little more complicated because of the difference. It has to be a case where he's required to give the get to the halacha. There's a whole issue involving if goyim force the yid to give a get, which is not a liberty hilchos, then you have a real problem. But that's a whole other matter. We'll get to that in Gittin, Bez Hashem.
Only when goyim intervenes.
Well, I mean, it would also be when a Beis Din intervenes if they're not doing it, a liberty hilchos there. If they're not doing it, I'll be halacha. Yeah.
And then Jews force him to give it.
That's what I'm saying. It's the same thing where the Jews are going. Either way, it has to be that they're doing it because he's required to give a get on the halacha. Anyway, so we have these first three things that the Braisa said, that there's a mitzvah esseh, that there's a mitzvah loyseh, and that Beis Din can force you. Each of those we learn from other psukim. So what do we need? What do we need this first half of the pasuk? The answer is chad alma v'loy afrish v'chad afrish v'loy akriz. The braisa that we brought yesterday, where we were of each of these pair of things, where we have two psukim that imply that there's an eseh, two psukim that imply that there's a lois eseh, and two psukim that imply that Beis Din can force him to bring the korban, there's two stages. Chad da'omer v'lay afish, that's what we were just saying. One is where you said, I'm going to bring the korban, but did not actually set aside an animal for the korban, yeah? V'chad afish v'lay akriv. And the second one is where you designated the korban, but you didn't actually bring it yet. So therefore, you need to be told that Baal Ta'acha applies to both stages, that Kofenot, etc. Yom HaRoitzani applies to both stages, etc.
When you say it applies to both stages, two stages to be
No, meaning in other words, that if the person made a neder, I'm going to bring a korban, and three yamim tovim have passed, and he's not yet even designated an animal, he's over on bapacher. And if he's designated the animal, and three yamim tovim have passed, and he hasn't yet brought it, he's also over on bapacher. Similarly with the kofenoi, so if Beis Din sees that he made a promise and he hasn't yet fulfilled it at all, he hasn't even designated an animal yet, they can force him to designate one. If later on they see he's designated one and he hasn't actually done anything with it, he hasn't actually brought it, then they can force him to bring it.
No, I think if he designated,
it might be a child. Yeah.
No, it doesn't mean he's just smaller.
Right. Okay. No, they're not going to go do a house search for him. But if they find out somehow, I don't know, mm-hmm. or some Adam come to Beis Din and say, you know, Utzricha, and we need both of those cases. The Yeshmin and Omav Layafrish, because if we were only told about the case where he said that he's going to bring the korban but didn't actually set it aside, then you could say, you know why, he's over on Baal Ta'achar, and you know why they can force him, etc. Mishum de Lekayim Elidibur, he hasn't even done anything towards fulfilling what he said. Avo Afrish v'lay Akriv, but if he had set it aside, but he didn't bring it yet, Emo, you might think it's not so bad. Kol Hecha De'isei, Be'gazad Rachmano Yisei. The fact is, wherever this animal is, even if it's out pasturing in the field, it's already as if it's in Avish's treasury. It already is hektish. There's already restrictions on what you can and can't do with it. So you might think it's not so bad if you delay bringing it. Kol Hecha De'isei, wherever it is, Be'gazad Rachmano Yisei, it is in the treasury. Be'gazad means the treasury of Hashem. Tzricha, so therefore we need to be told about that case. And vice versa. So if we were only told about the second case, about stage two, where he set aside the korban and did not actually bring the korban yet, you might say that's a bigger problem. Because this is a korban, this belongs to the Eibishter, and you're keeping it by you. What for? You're being over. But if he only said and did not actually set aside the korban, you might have thought that he said, you know, talk is cheap. So maybe you're not kofa on him on it, etc. No, because we said Amir Lagavari can sit on the head, but still, you might think, okay, it's not so bad. You know, he said, okay, you know, eventually he'll get around to it. Come on, Shmuel, rather Tzricha, that's why we need both of them. So you might ask, how can you possibly say that one or the other of these psukim is talking about the case where the person said, I'm going to bring a korban, and didn't actually set aside a particular animal yet?
How do we know that?
We just said that we have two psukim that say that there's a loisa there, for example. We have the one pasuk that says, so let's just focus on the loisa there. We had the pasuk loisa achal l'shalmoi, which is a loisa there, and we had an R pasuk, we said tishmor is also a loisa there, and we said, why do we need two? Because one is talking about what you said and didn't actually set aside the korban yet. But how could that be? V'han nedava k'siva, but it says nedava, and the first one we learned nedava at by Gzeira Shava. And by the second one, it says Nedava explicitly, Kasher Nedarta Hashem Lekach Nedava. Utznan, and we learn in a Mishnah, the first Mishnah of Masechta Kinin, Ezo Neder, what is the definition of a Neder? Ho'emer Harei Olai Oila, a person who says, I am obligated to bring an Oila. Ve'ezo Nedava, Ve'ezo Hi Nedava, Ho'emer Harei Zu Oila. And what is Nedava? Is where a person says, this animal is an Oila. Umabe Neder L'Nedava, what's the difference between a Neder and a Nedava? Neder Mesa Nignav Chai Bach Riosai, if it was a Neder and later on the animal that he set aside died or got stolen, he's Chai Bach Riosai, he's responsible to make it up, so he has to set aside another animal. Nedava Mesa Nignav Eina Chai Bach Riosai, whereas if it was a Nedava and it got lost or stolen, it died or got stolen, nothing happens. You said this animal isn't available anymore, so that's it, you're potter. So therefore, in other words, when it comes to Neder, fine, you have the two stages. Stage number one is I'm going to bring an Ola. Stage number two is I'm going to use this particular animal to fulfill my obligation. Nedava, by definition, there's only the one stage. Beforehand, you weren't chayiv in anything. Now you're saying, I'm going to bring this animal as a korban. That's, you went directly to stage two. There's no stage one. So what do you need two psukim for it for? Amarava, mashkachas law, still you could find a case where the Torah is talking about Nedava and you still have two stages. For example, a person kind of makes a hybrid between a Nedava and a Neder. He says that I promise to bring an Ola, but on condition that once I set it aside, I'm not going to be chayiv in bachriyosa. I'm not going to be responsible to make it up in case it gets lost or stolen or whatever. So in other words, he's saying the way he's framing the promise is as a neder, not a nedava, but he's putting the terms of a nedava on it. So then you still have. So it can be called a nedava because it is like a nedava in the sense that he's not responsible to set aside another animal in case this one dies because that was his condition. On the other hand, so we can call it an ADOVA. On the other hand, there you have the two stages. So stage one is he said, I'm going to bring an animal. And stage two is he set aside a particular one. Which Tosfos asks.
Can he do that?
Well, so Tosfos asks the question. Usually we have the rule, you can't be masnal mashakos of a Torah. Usually if the Torah says that there's certain conditions involved with a certain mitzvah or whatever, you can't unilaterally take away those conditions. One example was in Rambam Shlosha Prakim these days. A person is harvesting his field, for example, and says, I'm harvesting al tnai that I should be able to take all the lekach shikha and peya. You can't do that.
You can't do that. Change,
yeah. So how does it work over here? So Tosfos just says it's not similar. They don't elaborate. So what do they mean by that? Meaning that it would work in this case, obviously, because Gemara is saying it does. But how is that? Tosfos themselves doesn't elaborate. Meposhim talk about, for example, one possibility is because in this case you are able to do it. You could, after all, there's no reason for you to make it a neder. You could, to begin with, have made it an adaba, and you wouldn't be obligated to make it up. So just because you chose to frame it as a neder instead of an adaba, doesn't matter. You still have the right to do it according to this way, and therefore even in this case the Torah gives you the authority to change the rules in this case, basically. Because you didn't have to say a neder sheni chayv v'achriyosa, you could have just said in the first place an adava.
Yeah, but you it's still not exactly the same because setting conditions.
No, but that's you're setting conditions in a way that you were able to set anyway, that the Torah itself authorizes you to set that condition implicitly just by saying it's an adava. So we could have said an adava, but if he didn't, if he chose to say a neder, almanastre, nichai, brachriyosa, then you have an adava that has the two stages, yeah. We said, b'ficho zu tzedakah, the pasuk that said, whatever you speak with your mouth, this refers to tzedakah. So Amar Rava, tzedakah mechayiv alola alter. Tzedakah, actually, you're obligated on it immediately. In other words, there's no, you don't get the three regalim that we were talking about before. My timer, because after all, there are neim around. Melo with kobonos, okay, you know, you don't get to the bis mikdash right away, or you don't manage, you know, you don't get around to bringing the animal, the first yomtzer, or the second one, or whatever, then fine. But the anim, what are you making them wait three to go? Ask pshita. Well, isn't that obvious? The answer is ma'ud came a kibin dibinyon to kobonos. No, you would think that, yeah, it's obvious since that tzedakah is different than kobonos for that reason. And the answer is Ma'udatem, Kivin Debin Yonat Kobanas Siva. Still, after all, where is it mentioning Tzedakah? In the context of the other Kobanas. So Adabriel Gimel Regalim Kobanas. You might have thought that, yeah, maybe you do have the three yomtov deadline, just like Kobanas. Kamash Malan, that's what Rava is telling us. Hasam Udalina Rahman Regalim, that there the Torah is tying it to the Regalim. Abalhakalai, but not over here to Hashkhianim, because after all there are Neim available and they need the Tzedakah much sooner than that. Which Mefarshim discuss actually that Rava is not necessarily contradicting what the fact is the previous Braisa had mentioned tzedakah as one of the things that regular Baal Ta'achar applies to. So one of the ideas is there's a difference between whether there are aniyim around or whether there are not aniyim around. If there are aniyim around, it could happen. So it could happen, you know, you promise to give $100 to tzedakah, and then you look around and it happens to be there's no aniyim right now to give it to. Yeah. So therefore, you can't say that there are neim around right away. But according to one way of looking at it, some posts can explain what the Gemara means over here is you have up to three regalim to go and find some neim and give it to. And if not, then you're over on Baal Ta'achar.
And if there's one and you didn't know about it.
Well, you didn't know. But I mean, the point is you don't have to give it right away because if there are neim around, you have to give it right away. Or as soon as you possibly can. If there's no aniyim around, then you have up to three regalim to look for them.
Get that under the auto already, we'll find something.
Yeah. Omar Rava, another din.
From there, we see it's a big mitzvah to give to a nani, really.
Yeah.
Someone who wants tzedakah is not necessarily a nani. It's to be implied from this.
Well, no, because there are rules. There are minimum, there are, you know, things, the same way as there are with government, you know, with government aid programs, the same way there is with halacha, as far as who you're supposed to give tzedakah to. If a person has 200 zuz, if a person has 200 zuz, in those days that was enough to live on for a year, I don't know what the equivalent would be in modern money, I mean, the economy then was different than it is now, then they're not allowed to take tzedakah. I don't know.
I think it would probably be about
200 zuz. Actually, what it is the mission. It's the mission and pay. Actually, it says if a person has 50 zuz and he does business with them, so he's made. He's making earnings on this money. Or he has 200 zuz and he doesn't have. He's not making anything with them, but he has 200 zuz saved up. Then he's not allowed to take tzedakah.
And if he does, are you obligated to give him?
He's not allowed to take is the idea, but no, there is.
The family can't pay electric, and they could be worth more 200 zuz, but they can't.
The idea of 200 zuz was in those days it was enough to live on for a year, which means they have their expenses, you know.
But again, my question is, he has the 200 zuz.
No, Tamkoi is different. That's the person doesn't have Muslim shtey sodas.
But he has the 200 zuz. Are you?
We're talking about taking tzedakah
from other people.
From other people, yeah.
He has the 200 zuz. Are you obligated, if he comes to you, even though he's not supposed to, but he comes to you with his tzedakah, are you obligated to give it to him?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know.
Possibly not.
Possibly not, yeah. Another din, Omar Rava, kiven sha'over olav regal echad over be'eseh, as soon as one yom tov passes and you've not brought your korban, then you're already over on the eseh. The loisa said doesn't kick in till according to the different opinions, the 1, 2, 3, or up till Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, or up to Sukkos, or whatever, but the eseh, that we're saying, moitzes fasecha, that you have to bring your korban right away, that kicks in after one yom tov. What's his name? I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Adius. Heyed Rabbi Yeshua ver Papias. Rabbi Yeshua and Papias said Eidus al Vlad Shlomim about the baby of an animal that was to be brought as a Shlomim. Sheyikrav Shlomim, that you could bring the baby as a Shlomim as well. In the Mishnah over there, and in the Gemara in Temura, which brings this Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says no, that the Chachamim made a gzera that you should not bring the Vlad or the Shlomim, because then you may want to keep the mother animal around for a long time in order to have more and more babies, and you might end up shearing it or doing work with it or whatever, which is also with Kachim. So therefore, he says you're not allowed to. Therefore, he says don't. The Chachamim barred you from bringing the baby as a korban at all. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias are saying no. You can bring the baby as a shlomim as well. A shlomim can be a female animal. A shlomim can be male or female. So if it's pregnant, then it has, yeah. Amar Papias, and Papias says, I'll give you an actual practical example. Ani meid, shahoytul on a partial zivche shlomim, I can give edus that we had a cow that was shlomim. V'achalnu of a Pesach, we ate the mother on Pesach. We brought the mother animal as a korban on Pesach and ate it then. V'achalnu v'lad a shlomim b'chag. And then we ate its baby as a shlomim on the chag, which usually chag means sukkot. The two yom tovim later. So why did they delay so long? This shleim of Pesach like a revoy. Okay, I can understand maybe they couldn't bring the baby on Pesach emud mechus of manhava, because it may have been there's not enough time for an animal has to be at least 8 days old before you can bring it as a carbon. So fine, if the baby was born sometime during Pesach or erev Pesach, let's say, then fine, it's not old enough yet by the time Pesach is over. Ella vlad b'atzeres. But you say, but why didn't they bring an Ashavuos? Hechi mashila, how could they delay it? Ba'avri Allah be'eseh. And they'll be over on an eseh. So Rav is telling us they're over on an eseh. How could they do that? Amar Rav Zvid, Mishmei Rav, so Rav Zvid says in the name of Rav, very simple. You could have this baby was sick when it came to Shavuos. You're not allowed to bring a sick animal as a korban. It didn't have a mum per se, but it was sick. It's not a respectable thing to bring as a korban. So therefore they didn't bring it. Therefore they have to wait till so yes, they could have brought it. They could have brought it to Shavuos if it hadn't been for that, but they didn't, and therefore they brought it to Sukkos. They're not over on anything for that. Some of them discuss that. Is it that if it gets well right after Yom Tov, do you have to bring it then, or can you wait until the next Yom Tov? Based on our Gemara here, it seems you can wait until next Yom Tov. So that's when you're early the regal, anyway.
I also had a chance to get more meat on it.
Rav Ashi gives a different answer. My Valkalnu v'lav v'shlam and b'chag b'katani. What does it mean when it says b'chag? It means chag ha-shavuos. It means the next Yom Tov. It means Shavuos. The idach, and what would Rav Zvid answer to that? He doesn't like that answer because kol heicha the tani pesach tani aseret. Anytime we mention pesach and then we want to say shavuos, we don't say chag unspecified usually means sukkos. If we want to say shavuos, it would have said aseret. Saying chag it confuses the issue. So therefore we can't assume. So therefore Rav Zvid says you can't assume that it was on sukkos. You can't assume it was on shavuos like Rav Ashi says. You have to assume it was sukkos, and then the reason would be because the animal was sick.
Yeah, it's
considered
the conclusion of Pesach.
In a sense, yeah. Omar Rava, another din that Rava says, Kivin Sha'avaral of Gimel Regalim, once three Yom Tovim pass and you've not brought the korban, B'chol Yom V'yom over Baal Tachar. Every single day that you delay, you're over on Baal Tachar. Maybe the Gemara says I have a contradiction to this also. A braisa says echad b'chor ve'echad kol ha'kodshim. Whether b'chor or any other kodshim, the reason why we single out the b'chor is because the b'chor specifically, the Torah says it's supposed to be brought within the year after it's supposed to be eaten within the year after it's born. The Pnei Hashem alakachat techlan rishana b'shana. So both the b'chor and both other kodshim, kivin she'ogra aleim shana b'loyra golim. Once a year passes, even if there have not been three yom tovim in it, which we'll talk about soon how that's possible, or regolim b'loy shana, or three yom tovim have passed and a year has not passed. Over b'al ta'achar. Then you're over on b'al ta'achar already. So one second, the question is, the Gemara says, so v'ay ma'it yukta. So what's the problem? How does that contradict the Rava? Amar of Kahana, man de kamoisiv shafer kamoisiv. Whoever brought up this question in the Mismedrash is actually asking a good question. Mechti, because let's consider. Tana alavi pamahader. The Tana is looking to show us all the different possible ways that you can be over on a lav, about the Acher. A year without Yom Tovim without a year. If you're telling me, like Rava says, that every single day after the three Rugolim, you're over on Baal Ta'achar, listen, b'chol yom yom over Baal Ta'achar, then the Braisa should have mentioned that as well. There's another example, you're over on a lav. The idach and the other answer would be the other way of looking at it. If we didn't have Rav Kahana's point, or the other rabbanon who didn't bring in this question, they would say Tana l'mikveh b'lav kam. Or actually, Rava himself would answer. The answer is Rava himself would say Tana l'mikveh b'lav kam ahader. The Tana is just trying to show when is the lav established. At what point are you over on that lav about the acher for the first time? Balavi, you say to like Kamahadu. He's not trying to find how many different lavim. He's not trying to find how many different lavim you can be over on. Sure, there's no limit to that. You know, you could be 1,000 days late. You've been over on the lav 1,000 times. But the Tana is just trying to show what are the different circumstances when the lav kicks in. There are two possibilities: shana below regolim or regolim below shana. So there's no contradiction to Rava. Gufa, so now getting back to that Braisa, now we're going to analyze it. Echad b'chor b'echad kol ha'kodshim. We said whether a b'chor or any other kodshim, kivin sha'avra aleim shana b'loy regolim, as soon as a year passes without all of the regolim, or regolim b'loy shana, or all the yom tovim pass and a year has not passed, over b'al ta'acha. Now, the question is, that's the question. Dishleim b'loy regolim b'loy shana mashkachafla. We can understand how you can have the yom tovim without a year. According to the Tanakhama that you have, you need three regolim, and it doesn't matter the order. Or even a coin of Shimon, that you need them in order, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, fine, you can have your Makdash right before Pesach, comes the end of Sukkot, and that's it. You're Baal Ta'achar already, yeah. That's understandable. Ela shana b'lo regolim heichem ashkach. Well, but how can you find a year without all the regolim? So let's consider. Okay, we can understand you'd be able to work it out according to Reb Shimon, who says you need the regolim kesidron. He says you need davka, the order Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot. So very well then, you will makdish it right after Pesach. A year passes, you've had a whole year, you've had shalosh regolim, but they weren't kesidron. Reb Shimon would say you're not over yet. Reb Shimon would say actually, so rather, Reb Shimon would say because you weren't over yet mitzad regolim. But at that, because you didn't have the regolim kesidron. But at that point, you've already been over. But at that point, a year has already passed. So therefore, fine, we can understand that. What we would mean is, I mean, Reb Shimon himself would actually say you're not over on Baal Ta'achar until the next Sukkot comes. But what we would say is the Tana of our Braisa maybe would be saying, I agree with Reb Shimon that you need shalosh regolim kesidron, but I disagree with him. I say, or that it's one or the other, either regolim kesidron or a whole year. Whereas Reb Shimon would say you need both, yeah. But according to the other opinions that you don't need the Yom Tovim in order, then how is it possible? So let's consider another possibility. According to Rebbe, we could work it out that we're talking about an Ibur Yer. Titania, we learned in a Braisa, this is in connection with what we learned in last week's parasha, talking about the case where a person sells a house in a city that's walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. The pasuk says that you have a year to buy back the house, you have shana tmima to buy back the house, and if not, then that's it. It's the permanent possession of the guy you sold it to, you don't even get it back in yovel. The pasuk says the word shana tmima. What does that mean? Rebbe Omer, Mona Gimel Meis, Vishishim Achmishiyem, Kaminin Yemaitachama. Rebbe says it means you count 365 days, a solar year. Vachachamim Omer, no. Mona Yudbeis Chodesh Miyom Liyom, you count 12 lunar months, so when it comes back the same, which is 354 days. Vim Nisabra Shana Nisabra Loy, and if it was an Ibru Yor, if you have 13 months instead, then you gain an extra month. You have 13 months now to buy back the house instead of 12. So now, the point is, the Gemara is taking it for granted that Rebbe holds, when Rebbe is saying over here by Batei Arechayma that a year is 365 days, he means not only for that din, but for all other dinim that involve a year as well, including, in our case, Bal Tachah. So Mashkachas for the Rebbe, so you could find, according to Rebbe, it would work out, where is an Ibriyar, the Achdash of Basel Chagamat, so suppose that you Machdash the animal right after Pesach, the Kimata Shile Abder Basra, then when you get next year, 365 days later, when you have an Ibriyar, when you have an extra Adar, the year is about 19 or 20 days longer than 365. Instead of 365, a Jewish year that year is 383, 84, 85 days. So you have an extra 18, 19, 20 days. So fine, you can have your Machdash it right after Pesach, and Dechimot Shili Adar Vasra, when it comes to the end of Adar Sheni, Shana Mal Yerugolim Leimolim. You've had the full 365 days, but you've only had yet two Yom Tovim. You only had Shavuot and Sukkot. Which Rashi points out, actually, that there's two possibilities what the Gemara means over here. Either it means you will Machdash it right after Pesach, and in that case, then, the 365 days don't come out at the end of Adar, they actually come out at the beginning of Nisan. Because Pesach ends, the last day of Pesach in Eretz Yisrael is the 21st of Nisan. Even if the maximum possible Ibriyar you still have, you're going to come to Aleph Nisan. So Rashi says in that case, fine. It doesn't exactly mean the end of Adar. It means, you know, after the end of Adar. Or the other possibility, Rashi says, it's talking about you were Machdash during Pesach. And then, yes, you could have it. 365 days later, comes out the end of Adar.
Why do we count the end of Adar up to the end of...
Because we're counting 365 days. 365 days from the middle of Pesach in a leap year, where the following year is a leap year, comes out to the end of Adar Sheni. El ol Rabbanon hechem hashkachas. But how are you going to find that according to the Rabbanon, who says that you go according to the Jewish date, so you will Machdash it after Pesach, then you have to wait till after Pesach the next year, even if it's 385 days, for it to be Bal Tachah, and by that time it's to be Yom Tovim have passed. Which, you know, there is the obvious possibility that you could ask, what about you were, Tosfos asked, so how about the case, for example, you were Machdash it in the middle of Pesach, let's say. Didn't we establish before that the whole Yom Tov has to pass for you to be Ovan Bal Tachah? So suppose you were Machdash in the middle of Pesach, fine, the next year comes the middle of Pesach, a whole year has passed, but you haven't had Shalosh Regalim. The answer is that no, we do glue together the two halves of Pesach in that case. The end of Pesach from the beginning and the beginning of Pesach from the end count together to make one whole Yom Tov.
How do we know we can do that?
Because that's what we're saying. And actually, Tosfos Yeshanim has a different explanation, which is that the key thing is the beginning of Yom Tov. So therefore, so you didn't have the beginning of Pesach at the beginning, but you had the beginning of Pesach at the end of the year. So yeah. So again, according to the Rabbanon, how do you have a case where you have a year without Regalim? The answer is, Kedetonu Rav Shmaya. We can find it according to what Rav Shmaya said. Aseres pa'amim hei pa'amim shisha pa'amim shiva. Shavuos, we know Shavuos does not have a fixed day on the calendar. Shavuos is 50 days after Pesach. So therefore, the date of it in Sivan is not fixed. It can be the 5th, 6th, or 7th of Sivan.
Depending on
whether how long this in an year are. Kesad. Okay, Ted. Shneim Malayim Chamisha. If both Nisan and Iyar are Chadoshim Malayim, then Shavuos will come out on the 5th of Sivan.
30 days,
yeah. Because then what do you have? You have 15 days of Sfira in Nisan, another 30 during Iyar, so that brings you to 45, and 5 more. Shavuos is the 50th day, so it'll be on Hay Sivan. Shneim Chaserim Shiva. If both months Nisan and Iyar are Chaser, then you'll have 14 days of Sfira in Nisan, 29 in Iyar, brings you to 43, and then you need 7 in Sivan. Echon Molev, Echon Chaser, Shisha. If one is Molev and one is Chaser, which is what we have nowadays, Nisan is Molev and Iyar is Chaser, then it's on Shisha, then it's on the 6th. So therefore, what do you have? So suppose you have then, Rashi says, that, suppose that you have the first year Shavuos came out on Hay Sivan. The next day, Vav Sivan, Isruchag, you will Machdash this animal. The next year is a Chaser. The next year, Nisan and Iyar are both 29-day months. Shavuos is going to be on Zion Sivan. You come to Vav Sivan the next year. There's only been two Yom Tovim. There's been Sukkot and there's been Pesach. There hasn't been a Shavuos yet. So there you have a year without three Yom Tovim.
Always like that? So the third year?
No. Nowadays, it's a fixed calendar. Nowadays, we always have Shavuos as the 6th. The only way it's different is, of course, the crosses of the dateline. But yeah, in those days, it could be different from year to year. The Gemara says, well, my Tana probably got later to Rav Shmaya. So, okay, which Tana then argues with Rav Shmaya? Evidently, there is one, because the Braisa that we brought before that said that you have Shana below Regolim or Regolim below Shana, there is actually, in the Braisa over there, with the Tesefta and Erchin, there is actually a Tana Kama there who just mentioned the various numbers of Regolim that we mentioned in the original Braisa at the beginning of the Sogya. So obviously, somebody disagrees with Rav Shmaya and effectively is saying there can't be a Shana below Regolim. So who is that? That would be Acherim. That would be the Acherim. The Tanya Acherim Omim. Ein bein Atzeres Atzeres. There was never between one Shavuot and the next. Ein bein Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah. And there was never between one Rosh Hashanah and the next. Ela Dalad Yomim Bilvad. Only exactly 4 days in the week. Meaning, he's saying a regular year, not a leap year, a regular year is always 354 days. It always consists of 6 29-day months and 6 30-day months in strict alternation. 354 days is 50 weeks and 4 days. That's what we mean, that there's 4 days between them. If one year Rosh Hashanah is Tuesday, the next year, when it's Racherim, it's necessarily going to have to be on Shabbos. As opposed to the way we do it nowadays, that sometimes it can be 3 days, sometimes it can be four, sometimes it can be five. And if it was an Ibriyar, then it'll always be a 5-day difference, because Acherim hold that the extra Adar is always 29 days, which we'll get to later in the sector. We'll get to on Daf Chof, about the pros and cons of that, whether in fact Adar Aleph is always 30 or always 29, or it can be whatever the Sanhedrin decides.
What's the advantage of having only 29?
That's how Acherim hold, that's how it's done. The Pashtus, the reason is because if you look at the length of a lunar month is 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. 12 times that gives you 354 days, 8 hours, and 876 halakim. So because of that, they want to make a year, 354 days always. There shouldn't have to be an extra day, which actually the Gemara points out in Erchin, even according to them, sometimes you have to have an extra day because eventually the 8 hours and 876 halakim add up, but fine. Usually you won't. 2 out of every 3 years, you don't need that. And as far as an Ibriyar, same idea. An extra month is 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. Add that to the 354 days and change, you get 383 days, 21 hours, and 589 halakim. Same thing then, 383 gives you an extra 29 days, not 30. Yeah. So therefore, according to them, so then 383 days comes out to 54 weeks and 5 days. So therefore, they say in an Ibriyar, there'll always be 5 days in the week between one Rosh Hashanah and the next, or between one Shavuos and the next. The point is, according to Acherim, there's no flexibility as far as changing the order, as far as changing the length of the month. Nisan's always going to be 30, Iyar's always going to be 29, etc., and therefore Shavuos is always going to be on Vav 7. So according to Acherim, you never have a case where you're going to have a year without Regalim.
How can they say that? I mean, if the Beisim, those times, decided differently.
Actually, there is, well, the Acherim held differently, but actually there was a famous thing that Rav Sadia Gaon says that actually, the proper thing, the original din that the Eibishter gave Moshe is to decide the month based on calculation, not based on Edim. He says only when Tzedukim came around and started protesting that you Chachamim don't know what you're talking about, you're making Rosh Chodesh at wrong time, then the Chachamim felt it necessary to start doing Alpi Edim, to actually call in Edim and interrogate them in order to demonstrate to everybody, look, we know what we're talking about, you know, that we're declaring Rosh Chodesh to be on such and such a day, the moon is actually visible at that time.
They wanted to demonstrate that the Beis Din decides.
The Beis Din decides, but that the Beis Din is deciding based on the actual astronomical facts. So according to Rav Sadia Gaon, this Gemara would work, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, what the Acherim are saying would work out very nicely. You had a fixed calendar all that time because that's really how it was supposed to be in the first place. The only reason, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, basically you were having Edim was kind of for show. There's an extra minute at 9:40. We can join that.
So,
yeah.
So is that supposed
to be now, according to Sadi Goyen, evidently not. According to Sadi Goyen, the idea is when the moon is in this position, the Kaddish, you based in should see, you should figure out that the moon is visible, and go ahead and be Makadish. You don't need Adam.
According
to Sadi Goyen, you technically don't need Edim. They only started bringing in Edim when the calculation. Yeah.
That's what the Eibishter wanted. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a few minutes. Let's go. Play it up there. Yodesh Mal Bavalta Acher. Does somebody who Yarshin, from his father, does Baal Ta'achar apply to him? So you have, for example, his father promised to bring a korban, then he died, now the son has taken over the estate. Does he have Baal Ta'achar? Do we say, Kitzidur Neder Amar Achmona Baholay Nodder? Do we say the Torah says that if you make a promise, then you have to be careful not to delay? He didn't make the Neder. Or maybe, on the other hand, the Torah says, when you come to the Beis Hamikdash, you have to bring your korbanos. And so he is chayiv, and aliyah l'rego. Toshma, the Tani Rav Chia, me'imach prat l'yodesh. When the pasuk says that the pasuk that we quoted yesterday said kidorish yudoshenu Hashem alakecha me'imach, Hashem will demand it from you. The word me'imach means prat l'yodesh, means to exclude yodesh. That's what I mean. By me'imach mi'bar lezeh lakat shechil peya. We used the word me'imach yesterday to teach us that Baal Acha also applies to lakat shechil and peya, the matachanim. The answer is kari be'imach, kari be'me'imach. We break down the word. There's the word imach, which means with you, which we said refers to aniyim, etha ani imach. But then we also have the extra mem. And the mem is a miut. The mem means from imach, so it's a miut. It comes to tell us, but not everybody. There is an exception, and that exception is the Yiddish. But therefore, that's what it is then. So the father made a neder, and then he died. The son has to bring the korban. But there's no issue about Baal Ta'achar, at least with designating it. Maybe once he designates it, he has still Baal Ta'achar to bring it within 3 Yom Tovim. But
not before.
Yeah. Yeah.
The father's dead.
Yeah. Actually, that's true. Tosfos discusses, based on a Gemara and Kedushin, the question of actually, do we say B'chal, if the father only promised to bring it and then he died, is there a shibud on his property now? That therefore the neder has to be satisfied, or maybe not. Maybe it's only if the father designated an animal for a korban, then that's it, ready, it's hektish, and then the yodesh has to bring it. Doesn't matter, neder or nedava. Either way, it's the same animal still exists. Yeah, but maybe taka. If he only said, I promised to bring a korban, and then he died, maybe indeed the heir does not have to bring it.
We said what you say to hektish. It's
hal. He promised to bring a korban. He didn't promise this particular animal yet.
You mean for a nedava?
No, for a neder.
For a neder.
That's the question. Is there a shibud? Is there a shibud on the property? It's a machlokas in the Gemara and Kedushin over there, where the shibud derives or not.
On a nedava, for sure it is.
On a nedava, for sure, because he already designated the animal, yeah. Another question. Boyer of Zera, Isha Mahi Baal Ta'achar. What about, does Baal Ta'achar apply to a woman? Do we say that a woman is not chayev in the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel, of being seen in the Beis Mikdash? So therefore, vasa shama v'aveisim shama doesn't apply. Or maybe, after all, she does have the mitzvah of simcha. The question is basically, she doesn't have to appear in the Beis Mikdash mitzad re'iyah, because yeroah is called zechurcha. But she has a mitzvah to v'samachta b'chagecha. And what's v'samachta b'chagecha? To eat shlamim.
Well, that's for men.
For women as well.
Sure.
Wait. But typically, Dehoyisa b'simcha. Sabai says, well, we're there. That's exactly it. She is chayiv in simcha, so that should be reason enough. Wow, so we Amar Abaya Hochi. Did Abaya really say that? Well, Amar Abaya Isha Baila Masamcha. But Abaya said that actually, when it comes to a woman's simcha on Yom, her husband has to be Masameach. What does that mean? Rashi says that for a woman, simcha is not eating meat, it's rather getting nice clothes. Colorful clothes in Babel, linen clothes in Eretz Yisrael.
Not she
could starve. She doesn't have a particular mitzvah to eat shlamim to be Yotze Simcha. That's Rashi. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says that actually that's true when there's no Beis Mikdash. When there is a Beis Mikdash, if a woman is chayiv in Simcha, the Simcha she's chayiv in is the same kind as the men to eat shlamim. The difference is, Tosfos says, yes, but the chiyuv is not on her, it's on her husband to bring the shlamim. So you still have the question, if a woman has promised to bring a korban, is she over on Baal Ta'achar if she delays it? That's the question.
He's not supposed to bring it. He is supposed.
No. That's the question. She can bring it. But the question is she over on Baal Ta'achar? Given the fact that she's not, you don't say by her. Do we say on her vaveisim uvasa shama vaveisim shama or not? On the one hand, she doesn't have the same chiyuv because she doesn't have the chiyuv of Riyah, but on the other hand, she has the chiyuv of simcha. So that's what the Gemara is asking back. Abaya himself is saying that since she's chayev in Simcha, then yes, she's chayev in Baal Ta'achar, but Abaya himself says she's not chayev in Simcha. Either according to Rashi, she doesn't have to eat shlamim at all, or according to Tosfos, it's her husband's responsibility to bring shlamim. But what is Abaya saying? That since she's chayev in Simcha, she's chayev in Baal Ta'achar. Abaya himself doesn't hold of that.
Well,
The answer is the Dvar of the Reb Zera, comma. Yes, what Abaye is saying is according to you, Reb Zera, who are asking this. It's not his personal opinion. I myself hold that Isha Baal Masamcha. You seem to hold that not. You seem to hold a woman herself as Chayiv and Simcha. Well, very well then. That's reason enough to make her Chayiv and Baal Tacher.
How does she bring you
Korban?
She has her own money or she needs a husband's possession?
It could be she has her own money. It could be that the simplest way to assume is that it's her own money. Ibailahu, one last question about this whole business of Baal Tacher. We said before that b'chor is supposed to be eaten within the year after it's born. Now, there's two possibilities for the b'chor. It can be a tam, and in that case you bring it to the korban, or it can be a bal mum, and in that case you give it to the kohen, and the kohen shechts it. So, me'ema simonin lo'sha, from when do we count the year? Abaya omer mishal shem darlet. Abaya said you count from when the animal is born. Rav Acha bar Yaakov omer mishal shem nir la'hartza. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says from when it's suitable to be brought to the korban. The word hartzah literally means to be ritzonah. Now, we said before, actually, we said yesterday that technically hartzah does not really apply, the concept of hartzah does not really apply to a b'chor, because a b'chor is not being brought as a gift to Hashem or as it's an automatic thing. But nevertheless, in a loose sense, we're calling it hartzah, which is only when it's 8 days old. So according to Rav Acha bar Yaakov, only when the animal is 1 year and 8 days old have you missed the deadline. Everyone says, well, it's actually not a machlokes. Hav a tam, hav a bal mum. One's talking about a tam, one's talking about a bal mum. A tam, since you can bring it as a korban, you have to count. The year counts from when you're able to bring it as a korban, which is when it's 8 days old. A bal mum, you're not bringing it as a korban anyway. Therefore, you might as well count from when it was born. Because as soon as it's born, you're able to shecht it. The mass, what do you mean? Bal mum, you must be achal lay. How can you, even a bal mum, how are you allowed to shecht it right after it was born? Even the general rule is that the general rule is that we have to wait 8 days to make sure that it's not a nafel, to make sure that it's not a stillbirth or, you know, a non-viable, an animal that's not going to be able to live, which would be a tsefa, or even an avela, maybe. So even with a bal mum, on the face of it, you have to wait 8 days. The answer is, the kimlay ben shakola lechotcha. But we're talking about a case where you know for a fact that it was born after a full-term pregnancy. We'll learn later on Daf Ches that, for example, sheep and goats are typically pregnant for 5 months. If the animal was born after a full 5-month pregnancy, or in the case of cows, it's 9 months, then you know that it's viable. You know that it's a full-term baby and it's going to live, and therefore, yes, technically you could check it on the day it's born. If it's born for you. There's a similar concept with human babies. Usually we say with a human baby you have to wait 30 days until you know it's not a nafel. But if you know for a fact that it was born after a full-term pregnancy, suppose, for example, the couple had relations and then afterwards the husband went on a business trip or something, so there's no possibility that there was anything done after that, then yes, technically the kid's considered, if the kid is then born after full 9 months, after full 271 days, then that's it. You know that he's viable. You don't have to wait 30 days to establish he's not a nafel. But even in that case, in the case of a korban, the Torah says you always have to wait 8 days while you're shivas yom tachasimai. So therefore, that's the difference. Then by a bal mum, you can count from when it was born, because there is the possibility, at least, that you're able to shecht it and eat it on that day. Whereas a tam, not, because you can't bring it as a korban until it's 8 days old.
But it's not because it's born on tam that it's necessarily viable.
But that's our assumption. If it's born at full term, then yes, we assume it's viable.
Why do you make this assumption? I mean, there's many.
There can be various. There can be. Yeah.
After term.
That is true, but that's for that matter, there's children that pass away after 30 days old. But once they're 30 days old, they're viable as far as that they were born. They were born fully viable. Something else develops after that. You know, that's different. We're not talking about that.